Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Coming up on DTNS, using a moth antenna on a drone to detect smells, why Uber is not giving up on autonomous cars, and how to deal with TV subscription fatigue. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, December 8th, 2020 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
And from the... I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Don't go off script, Roger. It's hard to improvise.
Sorry. I know.
Joining us today, host of AVXL, Patrick Norton. Welcome. How's it going, man?
I am delighted to be here. I am full of mirth and good cheer.
And indeed. We were just having a great conversation about moths and seagulls and why the California seagull is the state bird of Utah. You got to get that wider conversation. Good day, Internet. Become a member at patreon.com/DTNS. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Couple of Google notes for you. Samsung announced that Google Nest devices will become Works with SmartThings certified. That means that your Nest thermostat, your camera, and your doorbell can all be controlled through the Samsung SmartThings app and also stream to Samsung TVs and refrigerators, should you so desire. Google also confirmed to The Verge that all Stadia users will be able to live stream directly to YouTube starting Tuesday. 9 to 5 Google noticed the feature started rolling out yesterday, Monday.
Research organization IPVM shared a document with the Washington Post showing Huawei facial recognition software has the capability of sending automated Uyghur alarms to authorities when its camera system identifies a member of the Uyghur ethnicity. The document was found on Huawei's website and removed after the Post and IPVM asked for comment. Huawei and Megvi say it was, quote, a test, and it has not seen real-world application.
Engineers at Cloudflare and Apple have developed a new internet protocol called Oblivious DNS over HTTPS, or ODOH. I like to think of it as ODO, that makes it harder for internet providers to know which websites you visit. So instead of a browser simply using a DNS resolver to convert a web address to a machine-readable IP address, which is how it works, it's an encrypted process, though. So ODO decouples DNS queries from the user by encrypting the DNS query and then passing it through a proxy server. The proxy server knows who's requesting it, but not what site, and the DNS resolver knows what site they're requesting, but not who was requesting it. If you'd like to know a little bit more about DNS and how it works, check out our Know a Little More podcast episode about DNS at knowalittlemore.com.
I like to think the ODO is a reference to Deep Space Nine somehow. Two Imperial College graduates have developed a browser called Zayn, spelled X-A-Y-N, meant to protect your privacy while still customizing things like search results. The user will train the AI on its preferences by swiping on things like news headlines. It then uses the Zaynet framework, which was developed for uploading anonymous machine learning data to a server before sending a refined model back to your phone. Zayn, again, X-A-Y-N, is available for iOS and Android.
Google announced an app called Look to Speak to help people with speech and motor impairments communicate better. With a phone positioned slightly below eye level, you could look left or right to choose from a list of phrases, which the device then speaks out loud. The phrases can be personalized so that the user, though that setup is not accessible by eye gaze, so it still requires some assistance. Google found that the app was helpful in environments where other accessibility devices weren't practical, such as in transit, if you're in the shower, if you're in an urgent situation, or maybe if you're outdoors. Look to Speak is available on Android 9.0 and newer, including Android One.
All right. Let's talk a little more about Uber and its autonomous car plans.
Indeed. So this story broke right at the end of DTNS yesterday. Uber announced on Monday that it's selling its self-driving unit, Advanced Technologies Group, also known as ATG, to Aurora Innovation, a competitor to Uber. The deal is expected to close in Q1, but if you think, well, is Uber giving up on autonomous vehicles? Maybe not. Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi will join Aurora's board, and Uber and ATG investors and employees will own 40% of Aurora following the deal. Uber will also invest $400 million into Aurora directly, and Aurora's autonomous cars will eventually operate on Uber's ride-hailing platform. Aurora was founded by Google's former lead engineer for autonomous cars, Chris Urmson, along with Sterling Anderson, who helped lead Tesla's Model X project, and Drew Bagnell, who ran Carnegie Mellon's research lab and worked on autonomous vehicles at Uber. So they all are in the space. And Gadget's Matthew Beatum notes that this may be Uber outsourcing the hard work in a way that minimizes risk, but still lets Uber reap the rewards if it all works.
Yeah, the whole idea with Uber developing autonomous cars was that eventually that would reduce costs because it would have autonomous cars taking people around instead of having to pay drivers. And if we set aside Uber's totally fraught relationship with drivers and how much they pay them for a second, you could see why that would make sense just in a general, you know, like, oh, this will be cheaper. We could make cheaper fares, et cetera, et cetera. I do think that you called Aurora a competitor, and that is true up until the point that Aurora gets Uber's ride-hailing or autonomous car business, at which point I guess they stop being competitors and start being collaborators.
Partners.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Patrick, you were raising your hand.
Go ahead. Part of me always thought that some aspect of their effort, they've obviously spent a huge amount of money and resources on autonomous vehicles, but part of me always thought that Uber's move in this direction was part of the reason they got such a ridiculous amount of funding in the earlier VC stages. And then we're going to eliminate the cost of drivers.
Well, yeah. And I mean, 2 years ago, that was still absolutely the play. It was, you know, the drivers were the first version of what would eventually be, you know, a bunch of autonomous cars taking people around everywhere. Obviously, 2020 hurt some of Uber's business pretty heavily. You know, a lot of people aren't sitting in the back of cars anymore. But Uber Eats has seen a huge uptick because people are at home not wanting to go out and they're still wanting food. So I think that the company is saying, listen, if Aurora can do the hard stuff, And we can take a big stake in the success that the company has in the future. Why wouldn't they? And they're trying to save money.
And, you know, I mean, Uber has had no end with Anthony Lewandowski and the whole lawsuit with Waymo, with the death of a person getting struck by an Uber autonomous car that had a safety driver who didn't do their job. This has been difficult for Uber. And I think that also makes sense to say, let's hand it over to a company that's doing very well. Aurora has Fiat Chrysler, it has Hyundai, and several other people as clients. So this makes sense for Uber to say, you know, maybe we're not the organization that should be running this, and we should invest in and partner with a platform that can provide this technology to us when it's ready. Apple introduced the AirPods Max over-the-ear headphones this morning, supporting high fidelity and spatial audio, adaptive EQ, and active noise cancellation. They feature 40-millimeter dynamic drivers, Apple's H1 chip, that's the same one in the AirPods. That means you can use active noise cancellation and transparency mode with Windows, because that H1 chip will activate that, and Android. You cannot use the spatial audio. The spatial audio requires a connection to an Apple device. A digital crown down is on the headphones to control your volume and playback, activate Siri, answer phone calls. A separate button switches between active noise cancellation and transparency mode. On the AirPods Pro, you kind of hold for a long press. On the new AirPods Max, you just tap that button. Apple says you should get 20 hours with active noise cancellation and spatial audio enabled, so pretty good battery life if it meets what they're saying. Apple says the knit mesh and the headband reduce pressure, so it should be more comfortable. There's memory foam in the ear cups, which they say will create a better seal. That's not cheap. Replacement cushions are going to cost you $69 each. AirPods Max come in gray, silver, blue, green, and pink, and can be ordered in the U.S. for $549. That's more than the Bose PS5 are selling for right now, with shipments starting December 15th. And Apple also announced Apple Fitness Plus will finally launch December 14th in the US, UK, Australia, Canada, Ireland, and New Zealand. It's $10 a month, $80 a year, or if you pay for Apple One Premier Bundle, it's included in that. That costs you $30 a month. Patrick, you're the host of AVXL. What do you make of these headphones?
One of them. I don't know. I was kind of staggered, like a lot of people, by the price. That's a pretty impressive price for noise canceling headphones, even from Apple. I pre-ordered a pair, going to get them. Very curious. I'm afeared that it will be a lot like many of the wireless Apple products, where any improvement, because the previous product was so awful, people will be like, "They sound amazing compared to," and it's like, no, they don't. If you buy a competing product at the same price, it'll probably sound better. Mostly I want to see what they've done with the noise cancellation, given that so many of the patents are nailed down on that by other companies. I'm very curious to hear what the microphone quality is.
It has like nine microphones in it or something like that, right? So,
well, I think it's 9 for the noise cancellation and 3 for your voice. Yes. There's a lot of mics. there's so many microphones, it's a little kind of disturbing.
I have to say, I have the AirPods Pro, and the active noise cancellation is quite serviceable. It knocks out leaf blowers and airplanes.
Yeah.
It is weird where it doesn't work. It's very, you can tell it's been tuned to certain situations, and there are other situations where it just doesn't work because it wasn't tuned for that.
I had that experience. I've spent a lot of time in the last year with some of Sony's over-ear noise canceling headphones, and one, it was kind of fascinating experiencing some of those, because the EQ in those is really bizarre out of the box, especially the low end, as in there's way too much bass. But it's also kind of, I'm very, very curious to see what the noise cancellation is like on this, because the in-ears, like the pods, the noise cancellation works, but it was weird how much it didn't cover, or maybe it's weird how much of my life,
which situations it didn't cover.
It fits within the noise cancellation capabilities or curve for those.
And my first thought this morning when I saw that press release, because that's all it really was, is like, gosh, that, you know, is Apple just kind of under the radar. But then I thought, okay, well, it wouldn't have made sense in the Apple Silicon, you know, Mac announcement a couple of weeks ago. It just didn't really work. Probably wouldn't want to bundle in an AirPods Max announcement with the redesigned HomePod, because it gives people less of a reason to buy a HomePod, right? Because you're like, oh, I'll just get the headphones. And also, the price is pretty high. So it's like, I think it's Apple saying, we're in the holiday season. Let's see what we sell, you know, get them out there. And then we can make them part of maybe a bigger Apple Music push the next time we want to talk about that.
Yeah.
I am excited about Apple Fitness. I don't have an Apple Watch, so that's something that I will have to come to terms with if I want to use it in any realistic way. But I think that for anybody who is reconciling the fact that they might not go back to a public gym anytime soon, $10 a month for something that you use a lot. Again, it always depends on how much you use it, but that's a pretty cheap gym membership. Yeah. If you've got an Apple TV, or you know, you want to cast it from an iPhone or something to a monitor, it's kind of cool. I'm looking forward to trying it out.
A few people sold off some Peloton stock today after that announcement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, Peloton. Engineers at the University of Washington, nothing to do with Peloton in this sense, have developed a small drone that uses moth antennas as chemical sensors. and they call it the Smellicopter. The team took the antenna from a common hawk moth and then mounted it onto a drone, connecting each of the antenna to a thin metal wire. The antenna's status changes when it's exposed to a certain chemical. The platform passes a light electrical current through the antenna to monitor that status. If it loses a scent, it can automatically fly crosswind until it picks up the scent again. The moth antenna is fast, it's reliable, and it's more accurate than traditional sensors of the same size and power. Of course, it can only detect some chemicals naturally, so one of the next steps is to figure out how to reprogram it to be able to pick up more. The hope is that it could be used for things like detecting gas leaks, detecting unexploded IEDs, search and rescue, etc. The paper on the Smellicopter is published in the journal Bioinspiration and Biometrics.
Biomimetics. Because it's mimicking. Mimetic.
Yes.
Yeah. When I watched the video for this thing, I had no idea how big a hawk moth antenna was. It's big and long and fuzzy. And yet, when they bend it over and attach it to the wires, it really does work. They were showing it going after a flower scent. So they had it hooked up to the drone and they had the flower scent being blown by a fan, and they kept moving the fan and the drone would stop and then find it and then start heading towards it. Essentially, they said, look, we tried all kinds of materials to mimic this and nothing worked as well as the actual moth antenna itself.
I love it. Moth to a flame or something. But yeah, this is it's neat.
Hopefully no flame.
Right. Hopefully, you know, stay safe, everybody. But yeah, Smellicopter using hawk moths.
Yeah, shout out to the University of Washington for an excellent name on your product there.
Yeah.
What do you want to hear us talk about on the show, folks? More moth stories? Let us know.
Yes.
One way to let us know is in our subreddit. Submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Oh, streaming services, they are hot. AT&T CEO John Stankey today told a conference that HBO Max subscriptions rose from 8.6 million at the end of Q3 to 12.6 million as of early December. At that same conference, NBC Universal CEO Jeff Shell said Peacock passed 26 million signups as of Monday, up 4 million since October. We talked about the possibility that Warner Media might have a couple new services out there. We talked about Discovery Plus last week launching. And you may think, well, wait a minute, how am I going to afford all this stuff? Here's some stats to consider. In March, Decision Data put out a survey and found the average U.S. cable package cost people $217.42 a month. That's how much people were actually paying for their cable service. Now, that usually includes internet. Sometimes it might even include phone. But you still save money when you cancel that TV part. A study from CG42 found people shaved an average of $85 a month when they cut out cable TV. A study from Landescu put the average closer to $115 a month. That's how much money people have to play with once they cut cable. Now, I usually take that and I compare it to an over-the-top streaming service like Sling TV or YouTube TV. If you apply it to that, you definitely could save some money. But what about Netflix? What about Hulu? What about Disney Plus? What about Peacock? What about HBO Max? What about Discovery Plus? Do those count too? Because I used to say, well, you were going to pay for Netflix and cable TV anyway. It's just an added feature like an HBO or a Showtime. But there's so many of these and they feel essential. Patrick, I know this is a question you've been wrestling with.
Oh, well, you and I were going back and forth in email before this episode, and I was laughing because I wanted to talk to you about this because I think you're the only person I know who probably subscribes to more things than I do. And it was the Discovery Plus announcement really kind of pushed it over the top for me, where I was sitting there. It's like, okay, Netflix, okay, Amazon Prime. I get that with, you know, Amazon Video, I get with Amazon Prime, but it's, you know, there's Apple TV Plus and there's Netflix and there's, you know, I started rattling off all the ones and it's like, OK, I got a Starz subscription so I could see American Gods. And it starts adding up. Right. If you want all the new Star Trek stuff, you need CBS. I was sitting there and I was laughing in pre-show and we were talking before the show on Good Day Internet, because, you know, it's been so long since I've had cable or satellite. I was flabbergasted by the $217.12, you know, like 42 cents a month. I'm like, is that include phone? Is that just cable services? That's ridiculous. But, you know, I'm still also at one point, I think I was paying like $140 for not much in the way of cable in the Bay Area. And it's interesting to, when you start looking at, like, how do I parse this? Should I buy the season of the show I want? Do I have to wait for the season of the show I want because of the, you know, the Windows appearances? Is everything changing in 2000 or is it, you know, 2021, because, you know, all the theaters are still going to be a mess until this summer? You know, if you want to see the new Wonder Woman movie and you don't want to go to a theater, well, you can see it on, you know, December 25th on HBO Max. It's been kind of crazy watching all of this evolve over this year, and things that I've never seen out of stock before, like subwoofers from reputable companies or Denon AVRs has been sold out. So I don't know. I feel like a lot of companies may be accelerating the launch of their online services, mm-hmm. just to get them in and get people hooked before the end of the pandemic, which is cynical even for me or really practical for them. But it's kind of crazy how many different competing services there are from all the different studios at this point, and Google, and, you know, the list kind of goes on.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
On and
I
on.
Mean, they're all in the works, but right. I think launch plans and promotional items, certainly things like Wonder Woman on HBO Max, are definitely due to the pandemic. Like we say with so many things regarding the pandemic, the trend was there, but it got accelerated. Right. I think that's true here too.
Yeah, and there's so many streaming services, but I know for myself, I'm a creature of habit. It's like there's only so many things you can watch in the small amount of free time you have in any given day, right? So if I'm like, oh, I like things on Netflix. Oh, here's a series that's going to take me a little while to get through. I'm not like clamoring to, you know, buy a bunch of other subscriptions because I kind of got my thing. And then you get used to it. And then you're like, oh, this is just what I watch because this is what I have. The way that cable subscriptions used to work for folks, I mean, $200 plus per month, even with internet, is, I mean, it's a lot of money. You can definitely whittle it down and save a lot of money and still see a lot of the stuff that you want to watch. But I think that the folks, you know, Discovery Plus, for example, I mean, wasn't necessary for Discovery Plus to roll out last week. I mean, I think that the network's like, we just got to get in there. You know, we got to be a player or else it's going to become one of these things that, you know, early 2021, people would be like, well, I already subscribed to 5 cable cutting services. Why would I bother? You know, I don't have enough time to watch your content, even if it's good.
Yeah, I started listing it out. Netflix, HBO Max, Disney Plus, Stars, Amazon Prime, Apple TV Plus, Showtime, Criterion. And I think I'm missing at least one service, and I'm not talking about any of the monthly audio services that I subscribe to.
Are your subscriptions.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? It gets it, you know. It's...
So here's a few of my thoughts, because I cover this very closely, not only here, but also on Cord Killers.
Right.
And I think all the companies looking at this are at the point where they realize there are still tens of millions of people in the United States who haven't signed up for one of these. So there's lots of people to go around, and nobody's really behind at this point. So you want to get your service launched and out there so you can get your market, right? Discovery Plus isn't meant to capture the same group that Netflix is. Netflix is a wide appealing one. Discovery Plus knows there are people who love our programming, and we want to get them when they cancel cable. And we want to be there for them when they're like, well, I'm canceling cable, but I don't want to miss Shark Week or whatever.
HGTV.
Yeah. You know, or House Hunters. So that's happening. And I think that the mental disconnect that's happening to a lot of people is, in the old world, you paid one price, you got most of the channels, you might pay a little more to get that one special channel, which you also had to pay for everything else in that tier. And then you decide whether you wanted to add Stars or HBO or Showtime to that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, part of what was so crazy about that is there I remember seeing studies where they were like, okay, the average consumer has 400 cable channels, they skim 17, and 95% of their time or 90% of their time is spent on a maximum of four channels. So to speak to Sarah's point earlier, people watch what they want to watch very specifically.
And we haven't got used to being in charge of that, right? The mental space is, well, okay, I could pay one price for live channels like an AT&T TV or YouTube TV, and then I have to pay all this money for all the a la carte services, and I'm used to having everything, so I guess I have to have everything. And no, you don't. The question I have is, which ones are like HBO and Showtime? Is Netflix a new way to pay for a channel, or a new way to pay for a premium channel that you only have sometimes when there's something you want to watch on it? And how does Peacock fit in there? How does Hulu fit in there? It's a new model, and you have control of it. I think it's a more complex model, because if you don't want to keep things
because
you have control, you have to keep track. So the next phase of the cord-cutting revolution, I think, and we're starting to see the hints of it with Apple TV Plus and Amazon Prime and Roku, is platforms that help you keep track of everything and manage your bill so you only have one bill to pay. And you can decide, like, oh, it'll make it easy to add and remove stuff as shows come along that you want to watch.
Well, and I think with the so many original shows that have been hits, then the whole kind of like, oh, pay for cable TV still. Maybe I'm overpaying a little bit, but I get everything. It's just not true. I mean, I have conversations with my mom all the time where she's like, Queen's Gambit sounds good. What is it? Okay, Netflix. Mandalorian, Disney Plus. Yeah, they have Hamilton too. Maybe I'll do that. And so it's like, none of this is anything that DirecTV was giving her for, you know, paying too much each month anyway. So. All right. Well, moving on. Alistair Davies of the Zoological Society of London, quite a segue there, and Emily Duncan of the University of Exeter were among a group of researchers who wanted to study how plastic pollution moves through rivers and then out to sea. The team released 10 plastic bottles into the Ganges River in India. Each bottle contained a small cellular chip that connected every 3 hours to record how fast the devices traveled and gave the folks data. Each bottle was expected to upload about 2 kilobytes on each connection for an expected total 100 megabytes of data. So, you know, small pings. But one of them racked up 300 megabytes. When the scientists checked the location log for that bottle, they found it had left the river and gone into someone's house, where it stopped updating its location but continued to rack up data charges. And it appears somebody found the plastic bottle, opened it up, took out the SIM card, and then logged into Facebook.
So they cut off that service, sadly for that person, I guess. But this is a great study about you know, where plastic goes, and it's a fascinating read on Ars Technica, the whole thing about, you know, getting technology into a bottle, and some use GPS and some use SIM cards depending on where they think it's going to go. But it was pretty funny that somebody was like, hey, that bottle's got an antenna sticking out of it. What's inside there? I'm going to take it home and look. Oh, wait, a SIM card. This is great.
Yeah. Hey, cool. It works. Facebook. Hey, friends.
All right. Let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. This one comes from friend of the show, Allison Sheridan, a frequent guest, in fact. Allison says, this young man, Aspen Palatnik, developed an iOS-based app that will sequence DNA as a mobile genetics laboratory. She gave us two links. One comes from phys.org. That's phys.org. We'll have these links in our show notes. She says, this is a human-readable version of it. And then there's some more nerd-level details, but still kind of readable, from Oxford Academic. We also will have that link in our show notes as well. The Oxford Academic article is titled Comprehensive DNA Sequence Analysis on Your Smartphone.
Yeah, this is great. So there are handheld DNA sequencers now, but they had to be connected to a much larger equipment until somebody's like, hey, why are we lugging around all these laptops and desktops to do this? Couldn't we do this on a smartphone and then just plug in the handheld sequencer? So that's amazing. I mean, we've gone from, you know, millions of dollars and months and months to sequence a string of DNA to doing it on your phone with an attachment, essentially.
Very cool. Thanks to Allison. Thanks to everybody who sends us articles that we might not have seen otherwise. I appreciate all of that. All of your feedback is appreciated, in fact, and you can send yours, questions, comments, or otherwise to feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We also would like to shout out our patrons at our Master and Grandmaster levels. Today, they include Chris Smith, Martin James, and Agracia A. Daniels. Mm-hmm. Also, thanks to Patrick Norton, AVXL co-host himself. Patrick, how you been since we saw you last?
You know, just moving and getting used to an actual winter and leaves on the ground.
That I remember having to rake when I lived in that part of the country.
My boys were not really thrilled with that introduction until they ran through the pile. Yeah.
Good times. Good times.
Leaves.
So yeah, folks, go check out AVEXL.com. It's AVEXCEL.com. We want to send you a holiday card if you're a patron and you haven't given us your address. You got a couple of days to do it. You got to get it in by December 10th. That's by December 10th. On December 10th, I will download the database and send it to David so he can start printing up the cards. Some people have asked for electronic cards. I'll email everybody on Patreon a link to the digital version of the card if you want to see that. But if you want to get the physical one, check if we've got your address. Go to patreon.com/pledges, find DTNS, look in the right-hand column. If you want the holiday card, make sure your address is correct and in there. Become a Patreon supporter right now, dailytechnewsshow.com/Patreon.
If you'd like to join us live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC, put it on your calendar. More at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We will be back tomorrow with the one, the only Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's AURA.com/safety.